KPBS On Demand is supported by Marakal Design and Remodeling, helping homeowners with their home remodeling needs. From ADUs to kitchen remodels, room additions, and custom homes, Marakal Design and Remodeling can help homeowners design and build their dream homes. More at trustyourhometous.com.
It's time for KPBS Midday Edition. On today's show, we're talking about the arts and culture shaping San Diego. I'm Jade Hindman with conversations that keep you informed, inspired, and make you think. Tijuana's opera company, La Opera de Tijuana, turns 25.
You can feel the tension, you can feel the release, you can feel the joy, you can feel the anger, you can feel all that in the music. We're just parts that just complement that music.
Hear how they're celebrating then. Christopher Ashley reflects back on his tenure as La Jolla Playhouse's artistic director, plus your weekend preview. That's ahead on Midday Edition. Can you hear it? Well, you're listening to the powerful voices behind Tijuana's opera company, La Opera de Tijuana. This year, they're celebrating 25 years of music and community. This Friday, they'll be taking part in a free community performance at the Casa de Cultura in Playas de Tijuana. And this October, they'll be performing the one-act opera, Cavalleria Rusticana. Joining me to talk about it is artistic director Jose Medina. He helped found the opera in 2000. Welcome, Jose.
Thank you. Thank you for having us.
So great to have you here. Also, Gerardo Gaitan. He's a tenor in the opera. Gerardo, welcome.
Thank you so much. Thank you, Jade, for having us, and hello to everybody.
Well, we're so glad to have you both here. Jose, you co-founded the opera 25 years ago. What are your early memories?
Maria Teresa Enrique and myself worked together before year 2000 in different projects. So in the year 2000, we decided to do something more, you know, a step or two forward. And thanks to many people like the government and the cultural center, even San Diego Opera cooperated with us. And we did our first performances at the cultural center, which was Bohème and Elixir of Love. And that was the beginning of this very, very long experience. It's been a roller coaster, but you know, something that brings to Tijuana something special that I think Tijuana needed so much.
Yeah.
So we're happy to say now that after 25 years, we're here. We're still here.
That's excellent. Gerardo, I mean, how did you first get into opera?
My journey into opera actually started a little later in life. As many Mexicans, I started, you know, my musical journey listening to trios, mariachis, and just being a bohemian at heart and, you know, enjoying those times together with your loved ones and family and enjoying music. Afterwards, I was introduced to opera and I just fell in love with it. You know, in Opera de Tijuana, I was born in Tijuana. Tijuana's, you know, is my city, and my love for it is immense. So when I was invited for the first time to sing with Opera de Tijuana, I was honored and enjoyed, you know, so much joy for me to actually give back to my city the talent that I was, you know, that I was got, it was God given, and to be able to share that with my town, my city, was just a joy. So it started later in life, but once I heard and started singing opera, I just fell in love with it, and it's taken me to, you know, all places all around the world, and I'm just so blessed to have sing opera.
That's great. Well, you know, you're kind of like an opera superhero because you're a lawyer by day, a tenor by night. So how do you make all that happen?
Well, you definitely have to take in a lot of hours, and you know, at the end of the day, it's all about passion, and it's all about wrings your heart. You know, for me is once I started, again, falling in love with opera, and not only that, then singing a full opera with all these moving parts, with all this dedicated chorus, with, you know, with an amazing orchestra, it you just can't feel more energy on stage than when you do in a full opera. So it, for me, I would sacrifice any time that I can in order for me to chase that and be able to do that and do it correctly, how it's meant to be and how it's supposed to be. An opera, the Tijuana, is actually, you know, they've been so, you know, such strong advocates for taking classical music into Tijuana and being able to do productions the right way, you know, that anytime I'm invited to sing with them, I'm more than happy to do so.
Yeah. Jose, I'm curious to know, what's unique about performing opera in Tijuana?
Well, actually, I was born and raised in Tijuana too, and all my father's family were musicians. I started with being a pianist, and I went to school, music school. I finished piano. I said to my father, I want to be an opera singer. And he said, "You're crazy. You're a pianist." No. And he got into me. So I got to do a nice career in the 90s. So I came back to Tijuana, and I thought that it's something that I could inject to the city somehow. You know, we already had some great talents like Marco Labastida, Monica Abrego, Armando Pesqueira, the conductor. So I got together with them, and then later on, Teresa Riquet, so we did this company. And I think it's been a great surprise how people... Gerardo was talking about passion. That's the word. It's a passion. Once you get involved into it, so that's what are we trying to do in the city. The years go by and the audiences come more interested and more. I love to hear them talk about certain titles and certain stories of opera. So anyway, and of course, Placido Domingo, Carreras, Pavarotti, Sara Brightman, Andrea Bocelli helps that a lot because they make this a little more popular and accessible to the audiences. So anyway, that's the story.
Well, because I was going to ask, I mean, you know, it sounds like each year there's more exposure and more interest in it. But I also imagine there's been plenty of challenges to keep the opera going all these years. What are some of the biggest?
Well, you know, the funds, of course, you know, the fundraising. Sometimes to put certain things that are interesting. And that's the most difficult thing, because it's a manifestation of art that is so full of, you know, people, orchestra, chorus, soloists, supernumeraries, and you know, scenery and lighting. So the fans are being tough, but you know, some seasons we're really fortunate to have wonderful sponsors and people who cooperate with us. And so that's the challenge, the money, as always.
Mm-hmm. That's everything, right? And Gerardo, just like in terms of keeping the audience engaged and wanting to participate, why do you think it's important to make opera into something that's accessible for people?
Because I think there's an obvious stigma, right? There's this idea that opera is fancy and it's only for the very rich or very wealthy people. But, you know, obviously it's not, you know, it's meant to be for everybody. It's meant for the world. And, you know, that's one of the missions, and that's one of the very big accomplishments that Opera de Tijuana has done, you know, and that where it says like, no, it's for the people. And here it is, you know, their advocacy and their efforts to bring it to everybody is just so evident. You can see it in their, you know, their great Festival de la Opera in La Calle, which means, you know, in the streets, there's a festival at opera, and they do it every year. And it's a free show. Everybody is able to come in and come and go. And not only that, but, you know, they can taste, you know, great beverages or great meals and still enjoy opera at the same time. And so that's one of their main events. then they're able to do also these small events in smaller parts of the city of Tijuana, where it's this outreach program where it's taken to all corners of Tijuana, and they're exposed to this classical music, opera music, and it's beautiful. So I think that's the biggest thing for everybody to see. It's for everybody. It's not about being, you know, just for the rich or just for the wealthy. It's meant to be shared for everybody.
Wow. Well, Jose, so all of that said, you all are turning 25 this year. It's your 25th anniversary celebration for the opera. What do you have in the works? How are you celebrating?
Well, we're doing this wonderful opera by Mascagni, Cavalleria Rusticana, which is a combination of the two things that we do through the year. Because before, Cavalleria is a short opera. It's a one-act opera. It lasts 1 hour and 15 minutes. But before that, we're doing some kind of a fair, an Italian verbena. So people can come and enjoy like they do at the Festival de Opera en la Calle and have some Italian restaurants that are exposing their foods and, you know, have some drinks and then come and see the opera in Playas de Tijuana, the 4th of October. We're doing that with a magnificent, I mean, it's difficult for me to say how proud I am of this cast, because they're all Baja Californians, people who started here, then went out in many places in the world, in very important theaters like Gerardo, and they come to Tijuana and collaborate with us to do it. So this is a very special occasion, not just for the people who makes this, but for the audience who follows, and you people, wonderful people that gives us this time to promote culture in Tijuana, which is needed. So that's the way are we going to celebrate on the 4th of October.
All right. Well, Gerardo, you'll be playing one of the leads in that opera in October. Tell me about your role in that.
Absolutely. Turiddu, which is the main tenor in that opera, you know, this character is just so full of dynamics, because he, you know, unfortunately, he's actually being unfaithful to his not wife at that point, but, you know, he's being unfaithful to his partner. But, you know, there's always this energy between him being caught and then him being denying the fact that he's actually cheating on her. And then but he's also torn because he loves this person. He actually does feel this connection with this person, that even though he's cheating on her, but he still feels this connection with her. So it's this struggle that he's going back and forth. But you see that energy on stage, and you see that pull between him and Santuzza, between saying like, no, you're wrong, you know, that and you feel that energy. And you feel it in the music. That's the beauty of opera, because ultimately, us as opera singers, we do our part. But the reality is the composers just write it in the music. You can feel the tension. You can feel the release. You can feel the joy. You can feel the anger. You can feel all that in the music. We're just parts that just complement that music and you know, be able to portray it so that when you're in the audience, you'll see like, oh yeah, you know, he's mad. For example, my character in many times he gets upset trying to deny he's cheating, even though, you know, the audience has already known that he's really cheating on her. I think it's a tenor in most of the operas, he's always the guy that who's cheating, and he's the macho guy. So I mean, I think we get away with it on stage, and that's the only point we can actually get away with anything like that. So,
wow. Well, you know, I don't know if a lot of people like realize the kind of training and effort that goes into playing a part like that. So, I mean, how are you preparing for that?
Absolutely. No, you really have to get into it. And, you know, it's a lot about also who's there on stage with you. You know, you have to be able to create that chemistry. You have to be able to create that tension on stage for it to be believable for the people that are watching. You really can't fake it. So it takes a lot, and it has to be a team effort. It has to be everybody on stage. As Jose mentioned, you know, we have a great cast. If the cast is dedicated to it and they make it real, they make it feel real, we make sure that the audience is going to believe it and they're going to feel it. And they're going to go home and say, oh, wow, you know, that I really felt it. And for us as opera singers, I think the best compliment I could have is they would say, like, oh, you know, you made my skin, you know, curl, or you made me feel something. That is God given. And because ultimately that's what we want. We want to give you an emotion that you will take home with you and say, like, oh, I enjoyed that, because mm-hmm. it's something different.
Yeah. Well, Jose, what are your hopes and dreams for the future of Opera de Tijuana?
Well, the biggest dream is to have a theater in Tijuana that produces opera and musicals and zarzuela and opereta. That's the biggest one. But next to that, I think to have the funds to have a regular season, you know, a regular season with two or three titles besides the festival on the street. That would be the next one. But it's we're getting there. I think little by little, it's been slow, mm-hmm. especially with the changing of governments and mm-hmm. ideas about culture. But I think it's getting there, because people is getting more convinced that this is bringing something positive to the audiences in Tijuana. So those are the dreams of the company. I wanted to mention about the cast again, because you know Norma Navarrete, who's doing Santuzza, fabulous soprano, and Javier Carrillo is doing the baritone. And I worked with them since they were, you know, very, very young when they started. So I'm so proud of them too. And Ana Laura Rojas or Samantha Garcia, who are doing the other leading ladies. Everyone I know. I directed Gerardo in a suite of Il Trovatore. It was so much fun. In Pagliacci. And I've seen him, you know, performing all over. And my God, I'm the like the grandpa now. I used to be like the father. Now I'm the grandfather. So that makes us so happy and convinced people. You know, it really reassured that this is going in the right direction. That's what I wanted to say.
Yeah. Well, you know, Gerardo, I don't know if you're warmed up. But I gotta ask if you'll give us
he's
a little,
always warmed up.
You know, you stay ready, that's great. But so, can you give us a little sneak peek? I mean, you want to sing something?
You know, I don't think you could be an actual tenor without being always prepared. Because any dinner I go, anywhere, there's always gonna be like, hey, can you sing something for us? So don't worry. I'm used to it. You know, I'm always warmed up, and I'm always ready to sing. So I may not sing something from Cavalleria. I wouldn't do it justice.
Whatever is on your heart to sing.
Because of the music, but you know, something popular, which obviously I'm sure every listener, you know, has heard, you know, at least once or twice, but, you know, something like O Sole Mio. Everybody loves O Sole Mio. And so, yeah, more than happy to.
I'm ready.
Start singing?
Yeah.
All right. Che bella cosa una giornata sole, un'aria serena dopo una tempesta. Bell'aria fresca, pare già una festa. Che bella cosa, una giornata e sole.
Oh my gosh, that was so wonderful. We appreciate it.
Unbelievable voice.
And you should hear it live. If it got cut off, but yeah.
Hey, we heard enough to know that it was absolutely beautiful. And what a treat for our listeners.
Okay, great.
Oh, my goodness. Well, I've been speaking with Jose Medina, Artistic Director of La Opera de Tijuana. Jose, thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having us again. And what can I say? Come and see us. You'll enjoy on the 4th of October, Cavalleria Rusticana.
Sounds like a great time. Also, Gerardo Gaitan. He's a tenor in Opera de Tijuana. Gerardo, thank you so much.
Thank you for having us. And yes, please come and see us October 4th.
Coming up, Christopher Ashley reflects back on his tenure as La Jolla Playhouse's artistic director.
I think everybody here takes really seriously the idea of creating a safe harbor for artists to do their very best and boldest work and to feel really like the Playhouse has you.
We'll also discuss his world premiere musical, The Heart.
Hi, I'm Dr. Rachel Jans, Associate Curator of Modern and Contemporary Art at the San Diego Museum of Art. We're presenting a landmark exhibition of Eduardo Chiida, a visionary sculptor who transformed the way we think about form, space, and material. Eduardo Chiida, Convergence, is the most expansive U.S. presentation of the artist's work in nearly 50 years, bringing together monumental sculptures, delicate works on paper, and a virtual reality experience of his iconic Comb of the Wind installation on the Basque coast of Spain. Eduardo Chiida, Convergence is on view now through February 8, 2026 at the San Diego Museum of Art in Balboa Park. Learn more at sdmaart.org.
Welcome back to Midday Edition. I'm Jade Hindman. La Jolla Playhouse has extended the run of The Heart to September 28th. The world premiere musical is the project of the Playhouse's artistic director, Christopher Ashley, who will be taking on the role of artistic director at New York's Roundabout Theater Company next year. KPBS arts reporter Beth Accomando spoke to Ashley about The Heart and his tenure at the Playhouse.
Chris, you are about to present a new play, The Heart, and literally we have a heart as a character. Is this true?
It is true. Yes, this is a world premiere musical, which takes place during 24 hours in the life of a heart and all the characters and people who touch it and are impacted by it in that day.
What were your first thoughts about this and the challenges that it might present?
Well, it's been a long and windy road for this musical, like most world premiere musicals, I would say. Most of them take 10 or 15 years to reach their first production. But we started out, the two composers, Ian and Anne Eisendrath, and I started out about a decade ago working on a musical about a heart transplant based on different source material, kind of underlying story. And that didn't quite come into focus. So when our book writer, Kate Kerrigan, came on board, she found a French novel called Mend the Living, or sometimes translated as The Heart, about a transplant. And it's this beautiful, warm, deep, extraordinary, moody, electric story about 24 hours in the life of a heart. So we found, once we found the source material, then the musical has come into focus over the last 5 years or so.
So what was the attraction about centering something on a human organ?
Yeah, the heart is such a key metaphor or idea in our culture, right? It's hard to talk about it without making a metaphor or a simile about, you know, let's put more heart into it as in rehearsal. But there's also something about like the idea of when someone's been injured, the generosity of donating your organs so that other people can have further and better lives. That seems like so many people have experience with that in their family. And there's something about, for this moment, pondering the question of what do we owe each other and how do we take care of each other, even people we've never met. It's a great moment to tell a story about taking care of each other.
And so how does this translate to the stage in terms of the way this is going to look for the audience?
Well, let me start with how it sounds,
because okay.
Actually that's kind of key here. So it's a completely electronic score. If you're a fan of EDM, this is the show for you. And it's a score that's made up of the sounds of the hospital, of the sounds of the club where the young surfer who's injured's girlfriend works as a DJ,
Your heart beats slow.
I'd say it's kind of fast right now.
Most people's heart rate is like 65 or 70, but yours is 60.
And this beat is 120 BPM. Double your heart rate.
The sounds of the ocean. It's really where it starts with surfing the first wave of the day, and the sounds of the human heart. So it's this very unexpected set of sounds that come together to make this score. And amazing designers, including video designer, have created this kind of world where you're in hospitals, you're kind of pivoting on a dime, you can go anywhere in the course of this production, but the whole thing happens sort of in dipping in and out of the experience of the heart itself. Sometimes you're inside the human body, sometimes you're surfing, sometimes you're in the hospital. Very exciting to stage, because you sort of look at the script and say, how would you stage that? But I have a great partner, Mandy Moore, choreographer, who is just an incredible, innovative, interesting creator of stage picture and really unexpected movement.
And so in terms of following this heart, are you following characters that are interacting with it, or how does that play out?
Yeah, so it's one day, it's 24 hours, and there's 9 cast members who play 30 or 40 different characters. So you basically meet almost anybody who is impacted by that heart that day.
And if you only have 9 actors, then you're going to be doubling up people. How does that play out in terms of, do these actors, when they're like doubling up, does that add a layer of kind of meaning to who they are playing in terms of multiple people?
I think so. I mean, the authors have created 9 kind of arcs through the show that are kind of the accumulation of all the different people that they play. And it's also, because it's sort of based on a novel, they also sort of tell us the story. So when the show starts, 9 actors come out and begin to narrate it for us, and then it kind of activates and they sort of step into the story.
So does this have a little bit of the feel of like La Ronde, where you're like following something in a circle or kind of going around?
There certainly is some aspects of circularness. You like that. I like that idea. But definitely, it's got a time clock on it.
7 a.m. Shift change. The handoff. Then I go to bed. I'm not late. 7:04. My mom wouldn't get off the phone.
Huddle up.
Good morning, everyone. 19-year-old male, a car accident near Tourmaline Beach, unconscious on arrival.
It's the details, it's precision.
Vitals, blood pressure and heart rate are stabilized.
It's the weight of each decision.
Have the parents been contacted?
Not yet.
Cordelia, right away.
We have to get this transplant accomplished in a given amount of time. So the pressure on the parents to decide whether or not to donate their son's organs, really moments after they discover that he's in a coma, the whole thing is under the pressure of that clock, which is great for a musical. Really, it really like organizes the time in a beautiful, beautiful way. And then you also, because we only meet Simon in the very, very first scene, after that, Simon, the young surfer, is really a memory of all the different people who knew him. So you kind of dip in and out of his mother's memory and his father's memories of him and his girlfriend. And it ends up being, I think, a surprisingly hopeful story because it sort of ends with new life.
Now, you were talking about the music and that there's like electronic music. Normally, that's not something what you think of as driving a theatrical musical. So what were the challenges of that?
Well, our music director's on stage, who's cueing the whole thing together with the actors. So you can sort of see the cueing and the sequencing of it happen in front of you. It's very, the theatrical work of the show is very exposed and is sort of part of, I think, the fun and the interest of it.
You're my heart.
You're mine.
Simon's heart.
Here are Simon's things. The final cerebral angiogram will take place in 2 hours. Take some time to think about it.
Time is ticking. Where will they land? Stuck but sinking. Cut the quicksand.
Most musicals start on a piano. right? That in rehearsals, you're there's a piano player who's doing it, and then you bring in a band later and you add all the orchestrations. This one, we've had the entire depth and complication of the music with us in every moment of rehearsal, which really allows you to stage very specifically to what the music is doing, like where there's a specific exciting sound or where it kind of gentles out. All of that is very worked into the choreography in a way that's been really, really exciting and gratifying to work with.
Juliet doesn't know.
And you mentioned that you've been working on this for a long time, but this is now turning out to be your penultimate play here at the La Jolla Playhouse. How does that feel? Is there something sort of fitting about this or something that you are appreciating?
I really appreciate that the last two shows at the Playhouse are new musicals. That's feeling great. And there's nowhere more fun to direct a new musical than La Jolla Playhouse. Just the staff is so incredible here. They take such extraordinary care of the artists who come to work here. But also, I'm incredibly nostalgic right now. I've been here for at the Playhouse for 18 years. And, you know, it's an amazing theater town, San Diego. It's an amazing organization, the Playhouse, and it's very hard to leave.
And we are sitting here in the library, which has on its wall a statement that says, "Safe harbor for the unsafe and surprising." Is that one of the things that you're kind of feeling nostalgic about or close to?
Yeah, I love that part of the mission statement. I actually love our whole mission statement. But definitely, I think everybody here takes really seriously the idea of creating a safe harbor for artists to do their very best and boldest work, and to feel really like the Playhouse has ya. We're a place where what you will provide everything that we can that you need, and create the best, most supportive, boldest environment possible.
And in what ways do you see this particular play kind of pushing the envelope or tackling something that you haven't done before that you're really excited about?
I think everything about this musical is different from every other musical. It has this electronic score that I've never heard before. There's no villain in it, except for maybe mortality. There's no lead character. All nine actors play powerful parts of an ensemble. So you're really watching humanity play out instead of just following the life of one lead character. It's 80 minutes, so it is a high energy, straight shot through. And there's something about it that feels very human, very emotional, and super modern.
This has gone through this long process, but is there something about this current moment in time that you feel makes the play especially resonant?
I think it's such a divided time that to tell a story about how we're all interconnected and the ways in which we all have responsibilities to care for each other feels, it's a satisfying story to tell right this minute.
And talk a little bit about the collaboration you had with the writers. Like, what was that process like to get to this final point of what the final result is?
Yeah, it's interesting because it's such a peculiar beast, this musical, that like it took us a little bit of time in early readings and workshops to figure out that the heart was the organizing principle. Early days, it was like, oh, we think we knew what the main five characters are, and we wrote it in a more conventional way. And all of that started to seem kind of beside the point. Like, the musical kept telling us, don't use the old rules, try to find new ones that suit this exact story. So what we kept finding is we needed to cut away any story that didn't directly attach to the heart and sort of the life of that heart in these 24 hours. It's also, everybody is a perfectionist. So there's nothing in that show that hasn't been kind of questioned, tested. A lot has been thrown out. In the last 4 weeks, I think we've cut two songs and added two totally new ones. So it's really gone through substantial changes in this rehearsal process. Also, the actors, the company of actors, are such a great part of the discovery of it. Yeah, this company has been so pivotal in discovering this piece. Five or six of the nine have been with it through many, many readings. They just, every time they ask a question, it opens a door to some great new possibility. They're super smart, they're deeply invested in their characters, and they've been a great part of this process.
Because this is following the heart, it sounds like it's a medical thing, you know, like it has this very realistic sort of angle to it. But is there also kind of a more poetic or surreal element to this play?
Yeah, there's definitely maybe half of the show happens in a hospital. We've been really trying to get that right. We have amazing doctors and nurses and medical consultants who have, you know, tried to keep us on a path connected to what actually happens in and transplant medicine. But also, yeah, the whole thing has a kind of theatricalness and imaginative quality. The play happens in a 22-foot square, the sort of all the real-time action, but there's a kind of waiting room around the sides where the rest of the cast watches the scenes that they're not in, and also where they kind of do bits of narration kind of inspired by the novel about what's happening in the lives of these people.
That was KPBS Arts reporter Beth Accomando speaking with La Jolla Playhouse's artistic director, Christopher Ashley. The world premiere musical, The Heart, which Ashley directed, will be playing until September 28th. Still to come, Julia Dixon Evans joins us with your weekend preview. KPBS Midday Edition is back after the break.
KPBS On Demand is supported by Maracal Design and Remodeling, helping homeowners with their home remodeling needs. From ADUs to kitchen remodels, room additions, and custom homes, Maracal Design and Remodeling can help homeowners design and build their dream homes. More at trustyourhometous.com.
Hey, thanks for sticking with KPBS Midday Edition. I'm Jade Hindman. This weekend, you can find art about civic gardens, jazz, queer comedy, and more. Joining me with all the details is KPBS arts reporter and host of the finest podcast, Julia Dixon Evans. Julia, welcome.
Hey, Jade. Thanks for having me.
You know, it's always great to have you here. Okay, so a dual exhibit opens in La Jolla, which explores public art and civic gardens. First, what is a civic garden?
Well, think about like your green spaces or your public outdoor gathering spaces. I think of it as like really this community thing as well as nature.
Oh, very nice. Okay, so then how do civic gardens and public art come together in this exhibit?
So it's an exhibit of two artists. It's called Visions for Civic Gardens, and it's going to be at Two Rooms Gallery, which is an independent art space in La Jolla. The artists are Esteban Cabeza de Baca, who was born in San Ysidro, and Heidi Howard. And so the pieces in this exhibit are intended to reimagine public spaces and then landscapes specifically in San Diego from the past and the current day. And they're going to be using portraits, landscape paintings, and sculpture to kind of like spin on these ideas of civic gardens. And I did read that they're both inspired by Nikki de Sanfal, one of the great public artists of San Diego. So that's cool. And there's an artist talk at 6 p.m. on Friday at the Museum of Contemporary Art San Diego. It's nearby. And then after that, the reception starts at Two Rooms at 7 p.m. This is on Friday. And then the exhibit will be up through October 4th.
Also in visual art, the Chicano Park Museum opens a new exhibit this week to celebrate a pioneering Chicano artist, Ramses Noriega. What do you know?
Yeah, so it's called Fragmentos del Barrio, and it opens Friday with a reception from 5 to 8. And Ramses Noriega is such a prominent voice from the Chicano art movement. He has a history of involvement in activism, art, and scholarship, kind of stretching all the way back to the 1960s and 1970s. And this exhibit is a great chance to see work from his entire career and learn more about the Chicano art movements, which is founded on resistance and a fight for equality. So it's the 60-year retrospective of his work. There's paintings, political posters, and more. And if you can't make the opening, it'll be up through February.
All right. Well, one more artist exhibit at the Free Timken Museum in Balboa Park. What's on view there?
Yeah, so this is the, it's actually a culmination of an artist residency from Marisol Rendon. She was there studying some of the artworks there in the Timkins collection and working on her own works. And she was focusing on this portrayal of what she's referring to as glory. The Timkin has a ton of devotional images. There's a lot of halos at the Timkin. And she used this kind of, this process of mezzotint, which it's this really intricate printmaking process. You start with copper and then this rocking tool that goes back and forth over and over and over again to etch into the copper. And then you apply ink into the scratches and make your print. And these works that she has made are just, they're really beautiful. They're really stunning. And I just love the whole process of it. This was supposed to actually be the closing weekend, but they are extending it through September. And the Timkin's free, always free, and open 10 to 5 Wednesdays through Sundays.
Wow. Really does sound like some beautiful artwork there. Okay. There's also a variety show at New Village Arts on Sunday called Serving Laughs. So tell us about this event.
So this is a showcase of some San Diegan queer performers. There's stand-up comedy with Taylor Spencer. There's improv performances from Drag Grace Improv. So they'll have sketch comedy, drag performances, and more. And I really love that we're seeing a lot more of these variety shows. It's great to see creatives come together to put on a show. And I love that we're seeing more of it at these theater spaces. They're leading the charge with this kind of like bringing the community together. Mm-hmm. And this is 7 o'clock on Sunday at New Village Arts in Carlsbad.
Lovely. All right. And the Barona Band of Mission Indians will hold their 53rd annual Barona Powwow this weekend. Tell me about that.
Yeah. So the annual powwow, it's a 3-day event. They're holding it at the Barona Resort and Casino, their sports complex there. This is in Lakeside. And it features Native American dance. There's hand drumming contests, music, singing, food. One of the things that they mentioned on social media is an Indian fry bread taco, which sounds really interesting. And they also have a market with art and handmade jewelry. It all kicks off on Friday with gourd dancing and then a grand entry of other dancers. This all begins at 6 p.m. Friday, and then it runs every day, ending 11 o'clock on Sunday. And it's all free with free parking.
All right. Well, let's switch gears to music. A couple of great jazz suggestions, starting with Jazz at the Creek.
Yeah, so this is the 14th annual Jazz at the Creek Festival. It's 2 days of jazz, soul, R&B, gospel, and this is all performed at the Lawn at the Educational Cultural Complex in Mountain View. And on Saturday, performers will include an R&B tribute act, Dirty Rice, featuring Darren, also Daryl Williams, David P. Stevens, and Arisa Nicole. And then on Sunday, saxophonist Gerard Albright headlines, Rebecca Jade will perform, The Group Fire, and Brittany Spaulding. And the festival runs from 1 to 7 each day. And right now they're even offering a buy one, get one ticket option. So if you look fast, you might catch that.
And the San Diego Tijuana Jazz Festival is in early October, but you can start celebrating now with the festival's pre-party concert.
Yeah.
Good time there. Tell us about this performance.
Yeah, so this is a free concert. It's at Courtyard, and it features Charlie Chavez, Isu Afrochuco. He's bringing his band to perform his blend of Afro-Caribbean jazz and Latin soul music. And you'll also get a preview for some of the performances that you can find at the San Diego Tijuana Jazz Festival. It's going to be 3 days, 3 cities, 2 countries, at Courtyard downtown, Escondido's California Center for the Arts, and then also in Tijuana. And that is coming up October 2nd through 5th.
On Friday, legendary local band The B-Side Players will perform a free show in Escondido. They've been around for decades, but just released new music this year. So let's listen to Make It Through.
I believe the day will come.
That's new music from the B-Side Players. Julia, tell us, how can we actually see them perform?
Yeah, at the California Center for the Arts Escondido, they're doing their Musica and La Plaza performances. They're free shows. They're outdoors at the Lyric Courtyard. And yeah, B-side players, they first started in 1993, mm-hmm. and they're still releasing new music. Their 10th album of music is coming out soon. And their sound is this blend of rock, funk, Latin, jazz, and hip-hop. The show is at 7 on Friday, and general admission is free, first come, first served. But you can reserve bistro sitting if you're willing to pay for a ticket. Those are just $30.
All right. Well, the San Diego Symphony performs their annual end of summer tradition at the Shell on Saturday, and I hear there'll be fireworks for mm-hmm. this.
Right. So this is their annual Tchaikovsky Spectacular, and they're going to perform 5 works by Tchaikovsky and also a piano piece by Chopin. But the Tchaikovsky pieces include some of his most famous compositions, including the overture from Romeo and Juliet, which you've definitely heard before. And then during the finale performance of their iconic 1812 Overture, which is a piece that the symphony performs most years in this performance, they'll punctuate the piece at the end with fireworks above the Shell. This is Saturday at 7:30, and there are still lawn tickets available, which isn't always the case for big shows like that. The lawn seats tend to sell out fast. And this is also a good chance to just go down there without tickets to the Embarcadero area and kind of see what you can hear nearby. There's a public walking path that goes around the Shell with some benches, so you can maybe find a spot to post up and see some fireworks.
Sounds like a great time. You can find details on these and more arts events at our website, kpbs.org. I've been speaking with KPBS arts reporter and host of The Finest, Julia Dixon Evans. Julia, thank you.
Thank you, Jade.
Thanks for joining us today. If you missed anything, you can download KPBS Midday Edition on all podcast apps. Don't forget to watch Evening Edition tonight at 5 for in-depth reporting on San Diego issues. Also, you can always share your feedback or segment ideas at midday@kpbs.org or give us a call. That number is 619-452-0228. Before we go, I'd like to thank the Midday Edition team, producers Ashley Rush, Juliana Domingo, and Andrew Bracken. Senior producer Brooke Ruth, arts segment contributors Beth Accomando and Julia Dixon Evans. Our technical producer is Brandon Trufa, and the Midday Edition theme music you hear is from San Diego's own Surefire Soul Ensemble. The Roundtable is here tomorrow. I'm Jade Hindman. We'll talk again Monday. But until then, have a great day on purpose, everyone.
Here in Southern California, we know all too well the devastation wildfires can cause. That's why our mission is to stop the next one before it starts. I'm Brian D'Agostino, leader of SDG&E's Wildfire and Climate Science team. And we've built one of the most advanced wildfire prevention programs in the country with a team of world-class meteorologists using artificial intelligence and real-time weather data, all to help keep our communities safe. We're also building a stronger grid and using public safety power shutoff when necessary, because believe me, I've seen firsthand how unpredictable wildfires can be. But here at SDG&E, we face that uncertainty head-on to help keep you safe. Learn more at sdge.com/wildfire safety.